Hi, welcome to the second Monsters, Inc. commentary by members of the Pixaplanet forums. My name's Lizard Girl.
I am the Wise Cookie Sheep.
And I'm Totoro.
To synchronize this commentary with your DVD, pause the video when the first blue shape appears after the Pixar logo disappears. And when I say play, click play. 3, 2, 1, play.
I always enjoy this introduction. It's nice that it's in 2D instead of 3D.
It gives a nice contrast to the rest of the film and what they've done before.
You really see that how much the Pixar folks love 2D animation, even though almost all they do is 3D.
I think also they said in one of the extras on the DVD about how it's meant to be kind of a bit more cheerful and jolly, because otherwise starting with the first scene as we know it in the scare simulator might be a bit kind of dark and frightening for the beginning of a kid's film. So this is quite light and, you know.
Sets a nice tone for the film.
I remember watching the film for the first time and being very frightened by this scene.
They really turn the mood upside down once, and then another 180 degree turn once Mr. Bile, I think that's what he's called, falls down and... really trouble for finding words. I don't have many opportunities to speak English, and it's really difficult sometimes.
Oh, this will be a good opportunity then, won't it?
Yes, definitely. Yes, no, that's the very scene. I think it's really a pity that Bonnie Hunt's character didn't get more screen time in this film. She's one of the greatest voice actors that have in the Pixar movies.
I love how much exposition there is here. It's all, you know, let's explain, you know, the world and how it works at the beginning of the film so then everyone can understand the rest of the film.
I just wonder how they come up with this idea that children are toxic. Has any monster ever died from touching a child?
That's a really good point, though. I mean, I guess it might be one of those, rumors or something from years and years and years ago, and it just built up to this massive thing about kids being toxic.
Every time I watch this introduction of Mike, every single time I always think it's the radio. And then when they show a town, I'm like, oh yeah, there he is standing.
Ditto, completely. Every single time. I think it must have taken, I don't know how many times, for me to realize that that wasn't the radio and that, you know, Mike was just adding on to the end.
Kid on a stick in the broom.
I love the design of Mike and Sully's apartment, the way they've got those sort of reinforced steel bars, because obviously Sully's massive, so a normal apartment could just kind of sort of fall apart.
The commercial. They said in the commentary that they wanted to make it like all the cheesy light commercials that you see, the power commercials. I think they did a pretty good job there.
I love looking in the back there and seeing Randall just shaking his head like, no, nothing to do with me. I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, the camera loves them, maybe, but the post-production certainly doesn't. The way they're covered.
I think one of my favourite things about this film was actually Monstropolis itself, because of the, you know, that kind of 60s jazzy feel with the music of, you know, by Randy Newman and everything. It just gives it that atmosphere that I don't think any other Pixar film really has. It's quite funny how they made the Monster World so pleasant in a way, because you'd think it would be a kind of horrible, scary, creepy kind of place. I think in the original storyboards they were going to make it a really kind of frightening place to be, but so much of the film set there that it just wouldn't be very nice to have almost half a film set in this really scary place, especially if it's for kids.
Yeah, there's a hidden city cafe which you just saw this actually exists, and this was even featured in the first teaser trailer for WALL-E, I think, where they had this conversation way back when they were discussing all sorts of ideas for new films, WALL-E among them.
Scare of the month.
I think everyone at work's got somebody like Smitty and Needleman. I know I have.
Harryhausen is, of course, a reference to Ray Harryhausen, one of the great masters of stop-motion animation.
That giant contact lens, that just is so funny, just the thought of it, you know. Randall's original name was Ned, I think, which I think rather suits him. You know, Ned would be quite ironic for a character like Randall.
I think that's easily my favorite line in the whole movie. You here. Suddenly he's not so brave anymore. Mid-sentence changes everything.
Ross genuinely scares me. I mean, I like the fact that she's voiced by a guy, Bob Peterson, but at the same time, listening to her, if you know that she's voiced by a guy, it kind of does make her really sound like a man. Like, I just can't help but think, you know, not something, you know, not right here, really.
When I saw this for the first time, I didn't know who was the voice of Ross, but I thought the voice really sounded kind of odd. It took really some time to get used to it, but now I think it's sort of the character in a weird way.
I think, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think one of the numbers when Mike scanned in the card, the number that came up is the birth date of one of the Pixar employees' children. Not sure who, but it's somebody's, I think.
Wouldn't make a good set of numbers.
A very ironic moment. I think this parodies Armageddon, which in turn parodies... Oh, what's the name of that film? The Right Stuff, is it? Because
yes,
it's quite
right
funny
stuff.
How it is The Right Stuff, isn't it? Randall, voiced by Steve, was standing in the same place that Steve Buscemi, stands when he has the same moment in Armageddon. So it's all meant to be reflective of that, which is quite funny.
I believe all the names on the listing were last names of Pixar employees. And then Randall is the only person up there with the first name for his title.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? I've always wondered why that is. Whether that was a mistake or... But no, it's not like Pixar to make mistakes, really. They go through their films so thoroughly that...
Pixar... does make mistakes like everyone else, but very few, and usually, even if you notice them, the rest of the films you really so good that you forget about them.
I think just there we see a, in the child's room, just a glimpse of a Paul Bunyan poster. That's also present in Sid's room in Toy Story. So obviously we use that. It's all those video games.
We sure got lucky on that door.
Some people have a theory that actually it wasn't luck, that it was actually Waternoose, who happens to be on the floor at the same time, who has sort of influenced which doors certain scarers get, and so he happened to get the door with the slumber party. But that's just a theory, you know.
I think in one version, George was supposed to be the main character. But that was like early to story development, but they just kept him in there for, what was I gonna say? Just to keep him.
In a way, I'm pleased that they didn't keep him as the main character. He's a cool character to have as a side character, but I don't think he'd be great in, you know, leading the movie and everything.
On the window outside of Russ's office, there is a sign which I only noticed when I saw the before. I don't know how. I don't know. It's, 1,000 times or so. It says "My way or the highway."
I never noticed that. Look out for that. See, I never really get that. What exactly are they ripping off him? Because he's had his fur all shaved off, the sock's been removed, obviously. So what is that?
It was a band-aid, but yeah, I don't know why they would.
Though how Waternoose actually jumps himself, we're not really sure, because he's not kind of jumping sort of monster, really. It took me a very long time to get that pun, a monster truck rally.
Ah, the odorants. Smell lovely today.
That's a great idea.
I don't know how Sally puts up with him. So what were your guys' experiences of seeing Monsters, Inc.? Did you see them, see it in the cinema for the first time, or what was it like?
Oh, gosh, that was a long time ago. I remember my sister got it for her birthday, and this was really before I got big into Pixar. And she would always yell at me if I ever touched her video, and she's younger than me. I was like,
Unfortunately, to miss this in the cinema. This is the last of three Pixar films which I only saw on DVD. So it's Bugs Life, Toy Story 2, and Monsters Incorporated. When you saw this, I think shortly after Ratatouille came out, I finally bought the DVD. I hope they will also re-release this, maybe in 3D, in a few years' time, who knows.
Oh, I'd love to see it in 3D. That would be really good. I definitely agree with that, yeah. All I remember of seeing it in the cinema was being, I think, in the second to front row because it was so busy, and in the last about half an hour of the film, really needing to go to the toilet, and that's all I can remember. So Boo was originally, I think, meant to be a 6-year-old girl, but they changed it to, about a 3-year-old girl, just to make sure that she had more kind of dependence on Sully. But at the same time, I think I would have quite liked to have seen her be a bit older, to be able to sort of voice her own opinions and everything. Because I feel as though, through the film, she's just a little sort of cute little girl that doesn't really have much of a personality. Mm. I mean, I know a lot of people disagree, but... See, sort of thinking, if the humans are meant to be deadly and contagious and all that kind of thing, it's surprising that he hasn't died yet. a lot of the time throughout the film, they don't seem to realise that they're having a lot of contact with stuff from the human world, considering that how the sock was treated earlier, See, now, why is Sully still afraid? Surely he's already touched loads of things, As an avid Randall fan, I have to say this moment is one of my favourite moments in the movie. Oh, look at his eyes. Oh. It's adorable.
This moment when he sneezes kind of reminds me of a sort of similar scene in The Incredibles, where you see the syndrome wipe his nose on his way to the plane. So it makes the character almost a bit human, even though they are really the villains of the movies. But sort of gives him a nice touch.
I'd love to see that.
I'd love to get my hands on the Blu-ray so I could finally read what's actually on the menu of Harryhausen's. That's right. It's a DVD, but you really can't tell because the resolution is too low.
Well, maybe if an HD or, you know, Blu-ray version comes out, you might be able to see a bit more detail.
In Japan, they have already released it on Blu-ray. But I think I'm going to wait for the German release so I can also show to people who don't understand English. Or Japanese for that matter. Well, then one really needs to be a bit more careful with the sushi knives, I think.
This may seem a bit grim, but in the original version, when they were writing this out, they were going to have Harryhausen's blow up. And then 9/11 happened in the United States. It would have been a bit odd, so they made the contamination orb thing. Shield.
Did they already do the rendering and animation and stuff for the scene and then cut it out later, or is this just something that they planned?
I think they said it was fairly close to done, and then that happened. So they just redid that scene.
And it reminds me of the first trailer for Spider-Man, where they had the Twin Towers in there, and then they completely cut the scene from the movie, and also... Really tried very hard to make that trailer disappear from the internet.
Yes, she's touched you many times before now. See, I can't help but wonder if at some point, if a Scarer had been trained and then they were going to go out onto the Scare floor and they messed up their first time, or maybe if any Scarer messed up once and accidentally made the child laugh, obviously that would fill the scream canister and, you know, maybe even make it explode. So I'm surprised that hadn't happened before, that the discovery of, have I just ruined the film for everyone? The discovery of laughter obviously being more powerful than scream. It's just surprising that it's taken them so long to realize that.
Imagine if this, boy mock-up in the scare simulator would suddenly laugh in the scene at the very beginning of the movie. Using mainly spoons, another absolutely great line.
There's a pub in town called Spoons, so I always think Solly's just going Spoons. Let's go to Spoons. What do you guys think of Mike then? Do you like him as a character? Do you find him quite funny? Because I know a lot of people, you know, really, he's quite a funny character.
Funny, definitely, but he has this character flaw.
I like him. I think he's funny. I think they did a great job of him overreacting. Like, not in a good way, though. Like, when he's trying to think of a plan, he throws up his arm, slams the table, and just really adds, I think. The way he pushes those blocks. nothing.
I bet nothing, yeah.
Next to the pillow on the wall, there's this small drawing. It looks almost like a drawing that Sully made as a child.
Might be then. I think Randy Newman was so right for this movie in terms of his style of composition and how he can really kind of, as I said, create an atmosphere. I kind of miss him in more recent Pixar movies. I know there are some other really, really good composers around, but there's something about Randy Newman that just reminds me of Pixar more than anything else.
He will, of course, return for Toy Story 3, so I'm really looking forward to that.
Definitely, Toy Story 3 is going to be great with Randy Newman. I always wondered why those other monsters were banished, really. Whether it was because of the same reason of having a child, you know, outside in the monster world, or if it was for something else. I think I prefer in the original sketch where I think Mike says it's his brother's niece, I think, and then Sully goes old. I think that makes her my daughter, yes. Which is funny.
Dancing with joy.
The look on Sully's face and, oh! See, now some people say that she's singing particular songs, I think from Disney films. But I don't know, I can't really hear it. I'm not sure what songs they are, but apparently it's, I think maybe from Aladdin, perhaps, one of the songs.
On IMDb, someone said that the first one was one of the songs from Snow White. But I can't hear it.
I've seen Snow White, but it definitely doesn't remind me of anything from Aladdin. I've seen that movie, I think, more than any other.
It's quite interesting how Sully and Boo's relationship has built up from, at first, obviously, Sully being so afraid of Boo, and Boo being really rather attached to Sully. And now he's almost treated her like she is his daughter. It's quite strange how he can make that connection with her despite obviously being brought up in a world where humans are bad, humans are dangerous, humans will kill you. And yet in a day-ish, he's able to develop this relationship with her. I think they say in the extras of the DVD about how Randall couldn't actually, his arms aren't long enough to be able to reach over to turn the handle of the tap, the water. So they kind of had to stretch his arms out a bit just so he could do that little thing.
I always wonder why he didn't see them in the mirror. I think at some point they should have been visible. I don't know if you just wasn't paying attention enough.
This is one of the few scenes in which the actors that voice the characters are actually recorded at the same time, because I guess usually they record in separate studios and at different times. But Frank Oz, who voices Fungus, and obviously Steve Buscemi, who voices Randall, actually did this together, which is, I guess, why it works quite so well as a scene.
A toilet paper to his foot.
I remember some that they were saying somewhere about how difficult that was to animate in itself, to have that kind of movement. It took a long, very long time just to do that. Love the yodeling. Very appropriate. You see Roz watching very carefully there. She's seen everything that's going on. I just keep wanting to say to him, turn around, turn around.
Oh boy, he's in trouble now.
Why painted? I never understand that either. Why would he guess painted? I mean...
It's probably so scared of Randall that his brain doesn't work correctly. Very over-the-top reaction there.
I'm going to talk about luck.
I love how they all come out of the toilets, because clearly they, you know, synchronized toilet going, you know. Noise just there when the little light bulb eye came out, I think was from originally from Luxo Jr. Like when the little Luxo jumps. That's showing now that Sully really has turned into a father.
Still attached to his hand. Cool.
I find it quite funny how Boo has kind of a sixth sense when it comes to always rattle about. Oh, yes, there he is.
The thing, I don't quite buy that Randall didn't see him. I don't think it was that dark that he couldn't see that it's actually Mike on the bed and not Boo.
I don't know, maybe he thought she'd put on a bit of weight in the monster world. You know, maybe monster food is not good for her. She bloated up, you know. I love the use of how they basically just don't have any music here. Just a few strings just to create that sort of.
I think on the DVD I even have a soundtrack where I have just the sound effects and nothing else. Or maybe it was... Oh no, yes, it was something Bob Monsters Incorporated and in the Bugs Life. Bugs Life also had isolated music score, which is very rare, unfortunately, on DVDs.
I love Monsters Inc. to bits, but if there's one thing I would say about this movie, that is that a lot of it seems to be spent running around corridors, or like sort of in Monsters Inc. It can be a bit claustrophobic sometimes.
Like how she's the one to find the door.
Somebody I know actually got some kind of high definition headphones or something where she turned up the volume really, really loudly just to try and hear what they were saying before, and I think it's something to do with talking to Waternoose. It's quite funny how they include speech that we can't actually really hear. See, that I disagree with. I think it is cretin, isn't it? I always thought it was cretin.
Yes, I also think Mike's wrong here.
Mike never knows when to shush, does he? Sort of thinking, if a child was put into the scream extractor and they didn't make any noise with their vocal cords, then surely it wouldn't work, would it? I guess it was on the assumption that the child would be so afraid of the scream extractor that they'd be scaring them screaming as it came towards them. Or so they'd stop screaming, I guess it wouldn't work. That's underbite there.
It's a really big plug.
See, now where's Sully coming from? If he's going above fungus, is he hanging from something or...
Well, in the commentary, they said that originally they had a little slot in there where it showed him hanging down.
Oh,
and I guess
okay.
That... Has anybody noticed the J is backwards on the banner at the top?
Oh, I've noticed that before. I wonder why. In a way, I like the original storyline in which Sully was more of a kind of, you know, he was the assistant of a scarer and he was a less important person, struggling to do well and all that kind of thing. Because it had no antagonist, there was nobody to be against, like in Finding Nemo and some of other other Pixar films. Terrifying situation to be in, really, isn't it? Sort of being trapped in a different world.
Is a snowstorm. Oh. I think this was one of the scenes from earlier Pixar films which they recreated for the end credits for Cars, where they make cars out of all the characters, and in this case, of course, monster trucks. No Pixar film without John Ratzenberger.
Wouldn't be the same, would it?
Ha ha ha.
another joke I didn't get until probably, I don't know, the 50th time I saw this film. Oh, they're yellow because of... Oh. I love the theory that Mike and Sally are more than friends in a way.
Mike looks almost like Mickey Mouse with the glass.
It's strange because all the way through the movie, we've had Sully as the big character, the really tall, I don't know how many feet, 8 feet tall character, and now we've got the abominable snowman who's actually bigger than him.
But then at the beginning of the movie, there was this really big Godzilla chicken-like monster, you could say.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him.
The biggest one of them all.
I really do think Mike's quite selfish in a way. I know they're in a bad situation right now, but obviously, you know, in a frozen wasteland. But, you know, Mike isn't... He obviously doesn't really understand why Sully, you know, cares about Boo so much.
I think he kind of took their friendship for granted. And now he's feeling threatened, so... When he sends him within these series of questions, he's like... As he just said, don't I matter? Feeling replaced.
Definitely. The scene definitely shows, I mean, Mike's expressions as well. If you look at, he's only got one eye, and yet he still manages to convey his emotions so well just using that one eye.
Been quite a challenge for the animators to pull this off. Generally, in animation, often the eyes are, even probably the eyebrows are most important for all the acting.
That's very true, yeah. Because otherwise, I think, wasn't it when, with Sully, not being Sully, but being Johnson, another character, and they gave him glasses? And then they decided not to give him glasses because they obscured the eyebrows, as you said.
I love how they did the snow in his fur. It's so beautiful how they did that. You can see, like, basically the individual flakes.
See, the fact that Sully manages to get back so easily does make you question what, you know, why banishment was a big deal, really, because he could just, you know, go through another door. It might take a while, but...
It's weird how Water News defends Sully in that situation.
So no, really think he couldn't care less about him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see in a way, just then, Wardenoose wasn't that... I mean, he was surprised, obviously, that Sully's come back, but at the same time, slightly pleased, because, obviously, Sully means a lot to him personally. He's just putting the company first all the time. And the question everyone asks is, how did Mike get back? How did he do it? And how did he keep some snowballs without them melting? See, and in comparison, the way Waternoose treats Randall is without, you know, is absolutely no care for him whatsoever, really. Just, you know, you get on with it, you do this. I wonder how many doors there are.
I always thought they looked like gift tags in the scene.
I can imagine how the animators and all the people developing software must have felt like when they came up with this scene. As if there weren't enough technical challenges in this film already, with all the fur and the snow and now this, with the gazillion doors and everything.
Ouch. See, if I were them, I'd just stay there. Don't run back into the monster world, you know? Still beach.
this part is so weird.
I love how confused they are by it as well. They're like, what? This way? This doesn't make sense. I really resent that remark. Mike's legs in that shot just there always bother me because they look like something, you know, like you see in the Muppets where they don't really have legs that move. They just kind of dangle there or sit there. They just don't look very natural. This is where we see Randall's true colours.
Taking charge.
That makes quite a weird sound when she hits him on the head.
See, now this I find completely unnecessary. Don't like to watch this scene at all. I think probably, I bought the DVD and probably for the first 3 or 4 months I didn't watch that scene because it annoys me so much.
Oh, poor Rand.
I'm pleased that was the trailer from A Bug's Life and everything, you know, the Peter's Plan Truck trailer though. That's quite cool. But their attitude towards what they've just done is just so weird because they just like, okay, we've killed somebody. It's fine. Don't worry. It's okay. Good for us. We didn't have to hold on to him or, you know, give him into the police. Well, let's just, you know, chuck him through a door. It's fine. So despite the fact that a human child's been in the monster world for quite a while now, nobody's been hurt or infected by her. They're still really kind of, about it all.
I'm surprised they don't hear him when he takes the door off the hinges. And they hear him when they knock over the containers.
think that's one of the most interesting things about Monsters, Inc. is the fact that the character who we think is the bad guy actually ends up being the kind of secondary bad guy, or, you know, not the main villain. And the person who we see as a grandfatherly figure and who loves the main character is actually, you know, the true villain in all this.
My freshman teacher did a project over Monsters, Inc. and had her class do it, too. And she was trying to figure out what she should do for Water News, because he seemed so good at the beginning, but he's the true villain. And I noticed that there's sort of a foreshadowing factor in this, where when he's talking with Sully, like when he's getting his cup of slug coffee, whatever that is, he's saying he'll do anything to keep the company from going under. And, he will. Man of his word.
And there's also this, scene where, Randall suddenly appears from front of the painting of Mr. Waternoose. And it also, sort of shows that there is a connection between the two characters.
That's a really good point. I haven't thought about it like that. Obviously, the theme of the film is things are not always as they seem. Rose is a good example of that now as well. Some very obvious references in Boo's room, like the Luxo Junior ball, and does she pick up a Finding Nemo toy later or something like that?
Yeah. A Jessie doll.
Like, hint, hint. Do you think Boo is old enough to remember all of this if she were to, obviously get older? And
I don't know. I've thought about that too. And, I've also talked with others about the time lapse of the human world compared to the monster world. Cause it's been basically a day and a half, or a day. And, it'd be odd if it was daytime and she wasn't there in the human world. So we wondered if she would just remember it as a dream. Because she went to bed and then she woke up back at home.
That's true, yeah. That's really, because I hadn't thought about it like that, I guess. Because it is obviously nighttime where she is. Thing is, would they shut down the factory though? Because that would mean no more Scream for Monstropolis. So. I mean, surely they could just have somebody else in charge of the factory. Does it really matter?
I think just through all that, just gave it a bad rep.
Oh, that's true. See, I think I'd scream. I don't think I'd laugh if I saw that thing in my room.
I don't think that is.
Perfect comedic timing. Maybe he was struggling a bit too much to make such a bold statement, I think. Once again.
Always the optimist. I still think it's quite sad, though, in a way. I mean, I know it's nice that they've found laughter and everything, but it's kind of sad that the traditional way of scaring's disappeared. See, there's one improvement of Mike is the fact that he now does actually realise how important his friendship with Sally is. People say it's a very open ending, and obviously there's rumours or maybe even a certain sequel coming out. I mean, what do you guys feel about a sequel?
Go ahead.
I think that's... I think what they will probably use as a story for the sequel, but somehow I believe that if they do a sequel, that it will be really great and do the first film justice. I can't believe that Pixar will ever do a film just for the money. Even Cars 2, I think. Although I think there are probably other films which deserve the sequel more than Cars, but Pixar's not DreamWorks.
I'm kind of iffy about how sequels are done, mostly. Like, the reason I became a fan of Pixar was because the only sequel, like, basically up to now, is they only have one, and that's Toy Story 2. And I am excited for Toy Story 3, but I'm still wary about the Monsters, Inc. 2, remember? And the Cars 2, which they're doing after. Not next year, but the year after. I think they'll be fine, but still.
Definitely, I do know what you mean, I agree. I think in my dream world, Pixar, aside from Toy Story 2, would make no sequels whatsoever and just continuously make new films all the time. I think Monsters, Inc. 2, I guess a lot of people love the film, and I can see why people would say that it would be good for a sequel, because they love the world that it's set in, but it just finishes so nicely there. And we've had the arc, really, haven't we, of most of the characters. So I don't really see there's any point in a sequel, really.
Yep. What else?
You could really say that it's the perfect ending for a movie, I think. I don't know of any movie that really has such a great ending as Monsters Incorporated.
So where does Monsters, Inc. come on your Pixar films list?
I think probably number 3 on mine. But watching the movie a lot for the commentary really made me... I'd get tired of it, but it made me want to watch it some more. Let's see.
I think it's probably in my top 3, although I don't know which position. Mm-hmm. Well, I would probably say at number 2 or 3. Because I think of it, Ratatouille is probably my favorite. It will stay for some time, I guess. Not only because it's such a great movie, but also because it's really inspired me as far as cooking goes, more than anything else.
How about you?
I don't know, it is definitely up there. I think Toy Story will always be my favourite, just because it's Toy Story. But I'm not sure. I love Wally as well. But then, to be honest, Randall makes this movie for me. I just watch it over and over again, just with it. You know, I know exactly what scenes he's in, so I just skip to those scenes just to see him. So I think that puts it in my number 3 position, probably.
Have y'all ever looked at the titles on the credits? They have Foley artists, which, you know, they knew, like, the sounds and stuff, but I think Foley and Gaffer. They don't even sound like real positions.
That's making it up, you know. Coffee maker, in you go. So is this one, I always forget, do we see the outtakes? Because I obviously wasn't paying attention. Because on my DVD version, they play the outtakes in the credits.
Oh, you bring it up, I didn't see them on mine.
That's very strange. Because I just always remember that, I just always think it's quite funny that they, I mean, I might not have been paying attention, so I'm not sure. no monsters were harmed in the making of this motion picture. I hope not.
I'm trying to see.
It's that accordion in the background there. The music makes me think of Ratatouille. So I guess that's it from us then. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Lizard Girl. Just to remind you.
I'm the Wise Cookie Sheep.
And I'm Totoro.